Inflation is still coming down, kind of. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. The Consumer Price Index out this morning shows year-on-year inflation in the month of January was 6.4%. Still high, but a seven-month low. Month-to-month price increases accelerated slightly. Prices rose 0.5%. Let's sift through this with Jeffrey Cleveland, chief economist at Payden & Riegel, who joins us. Hi, Jeffrey.
Good morning, Sabri.
So January was the seventh straight month of cooling inflation, but it doesn't seem like it's cooling super fast.
I think that's right. I think inflation has cooled from its highs last year, but it's still way too high. I think there was some excitement in the financial markets in the last couple of months that inflation was cooling off. The term that gets thrown around is disinflation. But I think we have to hit pause on the disinflation movie.
Looking at all this and then looking at the Fed, and what does this mean for interest rates?
Well, inflation is not coming down as fast as the Fed would like or as fast as the financial markets envisioned. So we think that raises the risk that the Fed goes above 5% on the Fed funds rate and then keeps interest rates there for the balance of the year. The view of, you know, a few weeks ago or a couple months ago that the Fed might shift or pivot was the word we heard used and cut rates this year, that seems to be ruled out by these types of inflation readings.
Jeffrey Cleveland, chief economist at Payden & Riegel, thank you so much.
Have a good week.
President Biden will choose Lael Brainard, the vice chair of the Federal Reserve, to be his new top economic advisor, according to multiple reports this morning. She would replace Brian Deese as director of the National Economic Council. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
As head of the White House National Economic Council, Brainard would advise President Biden on implementation of the Inflation Reduction Act and negotiating with Republicans on raising or suspending the debt limit. Bloomberg first reported that Brainard would get the job. She's considered one of the Fed's more dovish members, that is, less hardline on interest rate hikes and concerned they could cause layoffs. In a recent speech, Brainard said the Fed is determined to stay the course with higher rates meant to cool the economy and tamp down inflation. But she also pointed out that even as the Fed raised rates, unemployment fell to a historic low, and she saw no signs of a wage price spiral where higher prices push workers to demand raises, which just fuels inflation more. The Fed and White House have not commented on the reports of Brainard's move. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
When Medicaid came into existence in 1965, it was meant to help people on limited incomes pay for health care. What it covers depends on how you define health care, and that definition is evolving to include food. A handful of states have received waivers from the federal government allowing them to use Medicaid funding to help pay for things like groceries or nutrition counseling. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has more on that.
You know the phrase, an apple a day keeps the doctor away? Well, some doctors actually want to prescribe apples. Hillary Seligman is a primary care physician and a professor of medicine at UCSF. She says if she sees a patient who's likely to develop diabetes,
I am easily able to prescribe him a medicine that will help prevent him from developing diabetes over the next 10 years.
But Seligman studies food as a form of medical intervention and says what we eat can be just as important as medication. Now, several states are piloting the use of Medicaid funds for things like medically tailored meals. Madeline Guth is a senior policy analyst at KFF.
These are health-related social needs. The individual must have a documented medical need for the service.
Some people say this is not Medicaid's job and that programs like SNAP already exist to meet this need. Gary Alexander is with the Paragon Health Institute.
This is something outside the scope of Medicaid. You know, really, the federal government has a robust food program.
Some states are also experimenting with using Medicaid funds to help people get access to other necessities, like housing. I'm Stephanie Hughes from Marketplace.
The fastest growing segment of the workforce is workers over 65. The population as a whole is aging, but also more experienced workers are trying to stay active in the job market longer. That could look like phased retirement or part-time work. But to the extent that longer careers need more training or more schooling, higher education hasn't quite rolled out the welcome mat for older workers. There are some experiments, though, in higher education that suggest a change is coming incrementally. Here to tell us more is Marketplace's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell. Morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So people are working longer. They have multiple careers. If going back to college in some way, shape, or form is sometimes part of that journey, are schools actually catering to that at all?
Not really. I mean, these institutions, they still largely focus on, you know, offering education to younger people, and they're not geared toward having classes that help experienced workers launch their second or third acts. But the demand for that kind of educational opportunity is only going to grow in coming years. I mean, there's this combination of longer lifespans and technological change is pushing more and more people to multiple jobs and fluid careers over a longer period of time.
What does a college that is trying to go intergenerational or orient itself to lifelong learning, what does that look like?
So there's a couple of really intriguing experiments, innovations that are going on. Probably the best known are based at Harvard, Stanford, University of Texas, Austin, and Notre Dame. And these are small programs. They're built around a cohort of fellows in the second half of life. And I recently spent several days at Notre Dame's Inspired Leadership Initiative, and I met with his 20 fellows. And rather than retire, they're exploring how might they tap into their experience and skills to do something different and perhaps more meaningful in the second half of life. One of my main takeaways is how much the fellows learned from each other and also learned from being around the undergraduates.
You know, paying for college once is hard enough. How are people supposed to pay for it again? I mean, Harvard, Stanford, Notre Dame, those are not cheap.
Yes, and these programs are not cheap. Now, there are also some other initiatives around the country that shorter-term programs or lower-cost programs, but hopefully the lesson is the experience of these higher-end encore programs can be transferred with some modifications to less expensive institutions with more inclusive missions. Because here's the thing, the demand is there.
You think we're going to see more of these kinds of programs?
Here's my fearless forecast. Taking the knowledge learned at experiments like Notre Dame's and other places, colleges and universities over the next three decades will transform themselves into multi-generational institutions. I like the way Andrew Haldane, he's the former chief economist at the Bank of England, and he put it that universities will need to cater for multiple entry points along the age distribution rather than focusing on the young. In short, they will become centers for lifelong learning.
All right. Marketplace's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell, thanks as always.
Thanks a lot.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.